More and more families find themselves in the position of providing care for elderly and other relatives, especially as the baby boomer generation gets older.
Our next guest says those families are being stretched too thin and that we're headed toward a caregiving cliff unless those families get some help.
John Schall joins us now. He's the CEO of the Caregiver Action Network. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be with you today.
Well, as we just mentioned, you have said that we're headed toward a caregiving cliff. What do you mean by that?
Well, we're headed for a caregiving cliff because right now, if you look at it, 90 million Americans are already caring for their loved ones who are either elderly or have some chronic condition. And the demographics are really not in our favor. That situation is just going to get worse. The American population is aging, which is terrific. People are living longer because of medical advances, but that's putting a heavier burden on family members to take care of their loved ones. And this is going to be very, very difficult in the years ahead.
90 million, you said, and that number you think is going to just keep going up?
Yes, we've seen a tremendous increase in just the last 2 or 3 years. 90 million Americans, so 4 out of 10 adults in this country, say that they're caring for either an elderly loved one or a child with special needs or someone who just needs their care at home. And that's 39% of the population. That's up from just 30% in just 2010. So we see there's just been a rapid increase in recent years, and that's just going to increase even more rapidly in the years ahead.
What kind of, and I know there are, this story is probably a little different for everyone, but what kind of strain does that put on families?
Well, it puts a tremendous strain on families in terms of their own health, not just the patient's health, and also on the pocketbook. There's no question about it. If you've been in this situation and you're caring for an elderly parent with Alzheimer's, or you have a child with autism, or let's say your husband had a heart attack or your wife had a stroke, you realize that that stress that you go through as the family caregiver can take a huge toll on your own health. In fact, we have seen adverse health outcomes on the family caregiver who's caring for their loved one. Not only that, but, you know, financially, this is terribly expensive stuff. On average, family members are shelling out over $5,000 a year in out-of-pocket costs to care for their loved ones for things that just aren't covered by insurance or Medicare. For instance, if you need the products to take care of your mother's incontinence, Depends, or those incontinence products are not covered by Medicare. So there's a lot of out-of-pocket costs.
So that kind of expense, even without talking about institutional setting or professional in-home care.
That's absolutely right. Institutional care, can be quite expensive, on average $75,000, $85,000 a year. So this is situations where you're keeping your loved ones at home, which is terrific. It's great for them. It's actually great for the country in terms of health care costs. But it does put a burden on the family to do that care.
Are a lot of people in this situation because they can't afford institutional care or getting some kind of paid in-home help?
Well, it's a mixture of things. Some of it is people can't afford to get some in-home care, but really a lot of it is a much more positive story than that. That people are living longer. That elderly Americans actually want to stay in their homes longer. And we want them to. Frankly, it's cheaper for the country, but it's also better for their own health. Studies have shown the longer you can stay in your own home in a comfortable environment and being taken care of by your family, you're probably going to do much better. So there are positive reasons for it happening as well. But, you know, in the end, someone has to be doing that help, and that's usually a family member. And that brings with it an awful lot of stress on the system. It's always tough maybe to find flexibility in your own job so that you can have the time to take care of your loved one at home, and you're going to be much more susceptible to depression, and feelings of guilt and anger for this role that you've been thrust into. It takes its toll.
It's a weird paradox almost. I think probably everyone is either in this situation or knows someone who's in this situation providing at least some kind of care. And yet, when you talk about 90 million people and the cost, it's like this invisible part of our economy. Do we put enough value on the work that family caregivers are doing?
Oh, gosh, we certainly do not put enough value on it. And you put your finger right on it. It's this kind of great paradox that, almost all of us are in this situation or know someone who is. And yet, policymakers really don't pay that much attention to it. We did one study to show what the economic value of this care being provided by family members is. And it's about $450 billion a year. Think about it. That's more than this country's Medicaid funding combined. If you put every state's Medicaid, it's not as much as that. That's $450 billion is twice as much as all in-home paid care or nursing home services. It's almost as much as Medicare itself. It's a huge investment that family members are making in the healthcare system. I'll tell you, if all family caregivers went on strike tomorrow, we never would because we wouldn't do that to our loved ones, but there's no way that the nation could afford to fill in that gap. That's how big and important a role that family caregivers are playing.
Well, sort of going on strike, are family caregivers talking about their situations enough, or do we feel like we don't want to talk about this tough situation, or, hey, it's our duty as a family member to do these things, so I should shut up and just do it?
Well, there is a lot of that, and that's a shame, because actually I think we'd be much stronger if people did identify themselves as family caregivers and make it clear what we all do. It is a huge undertaking. It's a great sacrifice. Of course we do it out of love, and of course we're going to do it. But policymakers need to be aware of it and pay attention to it, because it's an awfully important role, not only because we're providing care, but we're providing some very important care. By and large, it's the family caregiver who's managing the medications, for instance. Our survey shows 70% of the time it's the family member who's managing the meds, not the patient themselves. And they're also performing, you know, tasks that we usually associate with just nurses or doctors. You know, family caregivers at home are providing wound care. They're operating fairly sophisticated medical equipment in the home. These are very important tasks.
Are we getting out of our depth in some cases, either medical care that's above our pay grade, out of our training, or sheer physical tasks, helping lift someone up out of a couch that maybe we're not up for?
Well, I do feel we are getting a little bit out of our expertise, and that's one of the reasons that my organization, the Caregiver Action Network in Washington, D.C., provides free of charge to family caregivers across the country some training in those matters. I mean, none of us is born knowing how to do this. There are things you need to know about managing medications. There are helpful hints about lifting your loved one and transferring them from the bed to a chair without hurting your own self or your own back. And we do want to make those kind of tips and in educational materials available. So, yes, I think there's a huge need for more training of family caregivers who, frankly, are called upon to do these things anyway. And we better just train them so that we can avoid, harm to the patient and also harm to the caregiver themselves. And that's what we're trying to do free of charge. But it would be nice if the policymakers recognize that too.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up. You mentioned policymakers a minute ago. What kind of policies can they make that would help these 90 million and growing number of people providing family care?
Well, it's interesting. The federal government did one very interesting thing a few years ago, about 3 years back. They actually provided, for the first time ever that I saw, in the veterans world, a stipend for the family caregiver who's caring for the wounded warrior. There are about 1 million family members out there who are caring for a loved one who came back from the war in Iraq or Afghanistan with injuries, frankly, that a soldier would not have survived in a previous war. So they're in a very different family caregiving situation than anything we've ever seen. And Congress created a veterans program where that family caregiver gets some training and gets a small stipend. It's not enough, but that's a huge step in the right direction. I would love to see more of that beyond just the veterans world, for family caregivers generally, because it can make a big difference.
I read somewhere that you're mulling the idea of something you'd call a caregiver corps. What is that?
Well, a caregiver corps, kind of think of the Peace Corps or the Teach for America model, but really for the caregiving world. I come back to this notion of the demographics, kind of where we started this conversation. As the baby boomers age, it's going to be pretty tough a few years down the line to find enough people to care for those who actually need some care. You know, right now you got maybe 7 potential caregivers for every person over the age of 80. But when you look at 2050, when I'll be over the age of 80, you know, that's less than half of that. Instead of being a 7-to-1 ratio, there'll be a 3-to-1 ratio. So somehow we're going to have to find more people who are able to care for their loved ones or just others. And so I think of a caregiver corps, you know, where we could recruit let's say college graduates, give them some loan forgiveness for their college loans, or people who are retiring but still active and still want to help, or family members who have been caregivers but are no longer caregivers who still would like to, you know, help others, and put them in a caregiver corps, give them some training, and, you know, make them available in the community for all these people who are going to need care.
We're talking to John Shaw with the Caregiver Action Network. He says we're approaching a caregiving cliff with families stretched thin trying to provide care for older relatives or relatives with disabilities.
We're continuing our conversation now about family care providers with John Shaw of the Caregiver Action Network. He says we're headed for what he calls a caregiving cliff.
And are you in this situation? Are you caring for maybe an older relative, a child with autism, anywhere in between? What is your life like? What kind of help could you use? What kind of reassurance could you use from other people? Is your workplace friendly to your needs? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you consider yourself part of the sandwich generation? Maybe you're raising your kids and taking care of your parents. Again, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. John, are workplaces keeping up with these 90 million people who are providing care? Are they open to providing flexibility for people in this situation?
Oh, I wish I could say that they were keeping up, but no, I can't go that far. But I can at least optimistically say they are finally getting the message. I think if you looked at the workplace a few years back, there really wasn't much recognition of the need to pay attention to family caregiver needs, and there wasn't all that much flexibility. But in the last 2, 3, 4 years, there has been a movement among some companies to really recognize that need. And there are actually a couple of dozen of the largest companies in America who have come together in a coalition because they realize that they do need to respect a caregiver's time and provide that flexibility. Now, they're not just doing it out of the goodness of their heart. You know, American businesses are smart, and I think they finally figured out that you do want to give flexibility to those employees of yours who are caregivers, give them flex time or whatever is needed. Because if you lose those employees to recruit somebody else, to train them, and to start all over again with a new employee, it's actually more expensive than giving flexibility to that caregiver employee. So I think they're finally beginning to get it. Again, I wouldn't want to overstate the case. We're certainly not where we need to be in the workforce. But finally, the message is beginning to get through a little bit.
You mentioned some help you provide, training for people dealing with some of the basics of caring for a relative. Are there community resources out there? Are there enough community resources out there to support groups, training, things like that in local communities?
Well, there certainly are some. There probably are not enough. Every community has a local area agency on aging. It may have whatever name, but basically a local area agency on aging that does some of this kind of help. But again, the problem with all those community services, they tend to be focused pretty much on the patient or the client as opposed to the family caregiver. And that's why we saw a need 20 years ago when we started this organization to provide some resources that really were focused on the family caregiver themselves. You know, how they can find respite, how family caregivers need to be on the watch for depression because they're much more susceptible to depression than non-caregivers, that they have a place to vent and talk to other caregivers because they're going to feel, you know, emotions of anger and guilt that they're not going to want to express to their loved one, but are all part of the natural process of being, you know, in this role. So that's really the difficulty. And I think that was the gap we saw and are trying to fill as much as we can.
Let's bring our callers in here. We've got Barbara on the line in Little Suamico. Barbara, hi.
Hello. I feel like I've been a caregiver in one form or fashion all of my life. I'm in my mid-50s now, between being a widowed mother and caregiving for my father and my grandparents and now my disabled husband. And it's taken a toll in my personal life in that the career I thought I was going to have, at first I put on hold, and then I just watched it evaporate. And I've kind of resigned myself to the fact that I take care of other people. That's who I am. But I'm now looking at my own retirement years. And while I do have enough quarters paid in for Social Security, Medicare is going to be an issue for me because I just don't have the work history. And, of course, my Social Security isn't going to amount to much either. So I'm feeling a little underappreciated by society. That's the word.
Barbara, thank you so much for calling in, and we appreciate the work you've done for your family. John, she brought up a lot there. I don't even know where to start, really. First of all, people in this situation may be putting their own retirement planning, their financial planning for their own old age on hold while they're caring for others.
Yes, it's actually a very big issue, and Barbara put her finger right on it. Interestingly enough, about half of those 90 million caregivers across the country have been doing it for more than 5 years. It usually ends up being, as is Barbara's situation, you know, kind of a long-time commitment. It ends up really becoming your life. There can be a huge problem because in a lot of cases, the family caregiver has either had to go on part-time or leave the workforce entirely to devote themselves to those family caregiving responsibilities. I've tried to push with the policymakers, you know, if you can't afford to give stipends to caregivers, and I understand the overall budget environment, so maybe that's not too realistic, but if you look at the Social Security system, if a caregiver had to leave the workforce to do full-time caregiving, in my view, you should be able to still be building up Social Security credits during that time that you're doing full-time caregiving. Now, that's a much easier change to make for policymakers, and doesn't have to involve, you know, direct expenditure of federal funds. So that's the idea I've been pushing. You know, let's change Social Security. So if you're actually doing full-time caregiving of your loved ones, and you had to leave the workforce to do that, you should still be building up those Social Security credits for your own retirement sake when you get to be 65. Because frankly, the answer is, you know, if all we've done is impoverish those caregivers when they get into retirement, that's going to come back onto the public system, too. So we're not doing ourselves any favor there. So let's do some changes on the Social Security side for that.
Thanks a lot for the call, Barbara, and good luck to you. We'll go now to Bess in Madison. Bess, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. This topic is near and dear to my heart. I am a nurse in Madison, and I'm glad. I didn't get to tune in to hearing everything that this gentleman had said, but I, from what I've heard, is absolutely the truth. My sister ended up taking care of my mother for more than 10 years at home. There are some comments I want to make about that, and in regards to my sister couldn't do it after a while, and we ended up having to hire somebody to come into the home. And, you know, I think that as a population, what he is saying is the baby boomers are growing older, and there is not going to be enough people out there to take care of people the older that they get. We need to look and see how much money that our government is spending to keep people in nursing homes. Because if we could look at an alternative as saying maybe there could be more group homes out there that would support people so they didn't need the skilled nursing facilities, it may be cheaper in the long run. I really feel that we are failing our seniors, and as I'm growing older, it makes me concerned. Who's going to be there to take care of us?
Bess, thanks a lot for the call. Failing our seniors, she says, John.
Well, she's got a point. There's no question. Home care is much less expensive than a skilled nursing facility or a nursing home. From a public policy standpoint, it would make perfect sense to make a larger investment to in-home care. Now, I wish I could say that rational reason carries the day with the policymakers in Washington, but that's not really the case. In fact, sometimes they still even bring up the idea of, you know, let's have a copayment in Medicare for those home care services again, which is just crazy. It's exactly the wrong way to go. If anything, we want to be doing more home care and less institutional care. So Beth's exactly right. I will also say, since she's a nurse, you know, thank God for the nurses. You know, you go into the healthcare professional's office, the nurses really understand it from the family caregiver role. They really get it. The doctors not necessarily always do, but the nurses really do, and I wish they would talk more to the doctors and make sure that the doctors are paying attention to the family caregiver and maybe even include the family caregiver on the patient's medical record so they know who to ask for questions, because sometimes the family caregiver will give you a much better answer about what symptoms or side effects they're seeing in the patient than the patient themselves will report.
for caregivers out there listening right now, maybe they're frustrated at their wit's end, what would you like to say to them?
Take care of yourself first. I know it sounds crazy, it sounds impossible, and you might even feel guilty doing it. But the fact is, caregiving takes a tremendous toll on your own health. And you have to take care of your own self first, because if something happens to you and you're not strong enough to take care of your loved one, that's not a good outcome. You want to be strong enough to care for your loved one. So make sure you're getting to the doctor. Make sure you're getting checked for depression. Make sure you're doing whatever you need to do to eat right, get some exercise, and get a break now and again. And even though you might feel guilty about, you know, taking care of myself first before my loved one who's got the chronic condition, believe me, it's the only way that this can work in the long run.
All right, we'll leave it there. John, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Rob.
That was John Schall. He is CEO of the Caregiver Action Network.
Coming up, we continue our series of interviews on Act 10, 3 years out. Democratic State Senator John Erpenbach will join the show in just a bit.
And yesterday, if you missed it, in our archives, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, a Republican, he was co-chair of Joint Finance when Act 10 was introduced 3 years ago. He joined the show. We started things off Monday with two reporters who wrote a book on Act 10 and the protests that followed. Later in the week, we'll be getting perspectives from union leaders in the state and a school district administrator as well.